bill provides additional funding to the Minnesota Department of Administration's Information and Policy Analysis Division, also known as IPAD. IPAD is charged with educating government entities and members of the public and legislators about the Data Practices Act. With this funding, they will be able to provide more web-based training and in-person training throughout the state. With me today is Ms. Lori Beyer-Kopinski, IPAD Director, to give us an overview of IPAD. And then after that, Mr. Patrick Hines from the League of Minnesota Cities will testify in support of the bill.
Ms. Lubinsky.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Lori Beyer-Kopinski, Director of Community Services at the Department of Administration. I manage a collection of community services programs and admin, including IPAD. As you consider Senate File 853, I've been asked to provide you just some background on the existing services we provide and answer any questions that you have. First, I want to appreciate Senator Dietzick and the League for bringing this bill forward and their awareness of the importance of ongoing training in the implementation of data practices. Having happy customers who think highly of your work and want you to do more of it is a pretty good spot to be in. Our mission is to promote understanding and compliance with the Data Practices Act, open meeting law, as well as other privacy and government openness laws. As Senator Dietzick mentioned, public entities collect large amounts of different kinds of information, and the laws balance the open and transparent government against citizens' rights and expectations of privacy and the government's need to do their work. So as government changes, as technology changes, and government staff and demographics change, we've found that education on these laws continues to kind of be an ongoing and changing need. Admin has been a statewide resource for members of the public, state and local government, the legislature, and the media on both of these laws since the early 70s. But what's interesting is even though there's a statewide resource, data practices is a very siloed affair, and every government, state and local government agency is responsible for complying with the law and providing training to their own folks. So to give you an idea, there are thousands of government entities at the state and local level, so your county boards, your school districts, your cities. I think there are almost 900 cities in Minnesota. Every one of them needs at least one person, hopefully more, who knows something about data practices. In your packet's a handout that kind of gives you an overview of what we do. And many people, when they see how many people we're able to train and how many calls we field, are really amazed that we can do it with 4.5 full-time staff. Given our special expertise and a general fund appropriation for $463,000 a year, more than 90% of our funding is spent on supporting salary costs. We have really prioritized and focused ourselves to really get the biggest bang for the buck with our staff resources. We really have found that that biggest bang comes from giving technical assistance through calls and emails and in-person requests. One thing you'd think that providing training would actually reduce the number of calls we get. Actually, as more government gets trained and becomes aware of their obligations, we actually, our calls go up and people can ask more complicated questions. So that's something that we see. The bulk of what we do, though, is answering those questions that can be from a member of the public who has a question on the city's response to their request for emails around a zoning ordinance, to the government employee who's calling to say, hey, there was some data breach legislation passed last year, and I think I'm supposed to have a policy. How do I do that? So we offer lots of help on our website, lots of different information pages on different topics that are like kind of frequent callers. And we try to simplify the learning on the areas. It is a complex law. We try and simplify what can be simplified, because what you will really see is that we want to save staff time for those complicated questions that people are going to have. And what you will often see at state and local government is that it's pretty rare to have someone who just does data practices for government. Often, much like, you know, the city clerk is a good example. The city clerk wears about 100 hats, and this might be one of them. So we really try and design resources so that it's really easy for those folks to keep up to speed with the most minimal amount of time possible. So that's what we do. We've got a quarterly newsletter. We've got PowerPoints. We really have a train-the-trainer kind of model that will give everyone all the tools that they can just kind of steal and use with the people that they need to train in their own organization. So we have got short videos, presentations, if you ever need something you want to see it. covering the basics, covering open meeting law. Where we get the most of our questions, and it's you'll probably see it from all the bills you see, personnel data, so data about government employees and law enforcement data are two biggest areas where we get questions, so we've designed a lot of resources to answer those kinds of questions. So as we also provide full and half-day fee-based trainings on personnel data, law enforcement, data practices, policies, and open meeting. We also, as our budget allows, provide 1 to 2 hour presentations to audiences that have a statewide reach and have a high need for this kind of information. We have partnered with newspapers and the League of Women Voters in the past to try and do presentations in a variety of settings to kind of expand our reach to public audiences. But as a small office, we try and make the most of our time and resources. That means we're pretty metro-centric, just to be honest. And what we continue to hear about unmet needs is our customers really want locally offered regional trainings in Greater Minnesota. And that's not something we're able to do. Folks really want our experts to be on the road in all the corners of Minnesota. And if you've ever planned a wedding or a family reunion, you'll know that it's expensive and time-consuming to take your show on the road. With any additional resources, we could bring our experts across the state and take advantage of some live streaming technology and distance learning to expand our reach. Thank you very much for this opportunity to share information on what we're already providing, and I can answer any questions that you might have.
Sounds like Ms. Kropinski's pretty good at answering questions. Is there any questions for her? Okay, good. Mr. Hines.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Patrick Hines. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I want to thank Senator Dietzick for authoring this bill. We do think that getting more money to train our local government officials is a really wise use of state resources. I'll note that this bill is also supported by the Association of Minnesota Counties, by the Minnesota Inter-County Association, the Minnesota School Board Association, and also, and there's a letter in your packet from the Minnesota Newspaper Association. And if you follow data practices at all, you'll notice that many times the newspapers or reporters are the ones requesting data from local units of government. And sometimes because of that, there can be disputes about what data is public or private or how much data should be given out. And so I think it's telling that local units of government and the newspaper association both agree that more training for our local officials is important, because at the end of the day, the better trained the person is who's getting these requests, the more efficiently they'll respond to them. I won't go over in detail how complicated the Data Practices Act is. I think you all know that, probably because most of you look at it and want to run the other direction when someone asks questions about it. Our city officials can't do that. The buck stops there when it comes to answering those questions, and so we really do think it would be beneficial for IPAD to have some more funding so that they could update their training, focus on some new areas that maybe in the past haven't been as important. And also, as Ms. Byer-Kropinski said, get out to Greater Minnesota, because the training they offer now is largely based in the metro area, and even that training always fills up. There's more demand than is being met. And we'd like to see them out in Bemidji or St. Cloud or Worthington and regional centers, so those clerks and city officials who are dealing with the act can get that in-person training. And I would thank the committee for their time. I'll stand for any questions.
Questions for Mr. Hines? Any questions on Senate File 853? If not, Senator Dietzick, we're going to take Senate File 853 and lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Yep, thank you for your time, and appreciate any support. And if you have any questions, you can follow up with me.
Next, we have Senate File 387, Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members.
Senator Torres Ray, do you have an amendment for us?
I do, Mr. Chair. I do have the A1 amendment. It's just a technical amendment. I would like to move to put the bill in the shape that it's supposed to be.
Senator Torres-Ray moves the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion? If not, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A1 amendment is adopted. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members. Perhaps all the members are quite familiar with the work of the Humanities Center, and we are all very proud of the work that they do. And Senate File 387 is really an attempt to help the Humanities Center continue to do this its work. The Humanities Center is really leveraging a lot of funds from private sector, federal money, that is really significant for the state of Minnesota. This funding appropriation is a small one and is really intended to go to the Humanities Center for operational purposes, very practical things that they do. Their statewide responsibility has a strong track record, and we would like them to continue to provide their services around the state of Minnesota. They work with multiple diverse groups, small and large, and they do public education, public affairs, civic engagement, and they also work with veterans groups as well as diverse communities throughout the state of Minnesota. These base funding supports the basic operations of the Humanities Center, which includes the event, the site that holds multiple events for hundreds of people that come for training and other purposes. They have hosted about 200 statewide groups and about 10,000 people over the last 2 years alone. Funding supports the operation of programs that affect people and communities across the state, and we have a map that I believe has been provided to the committee kind of to show you the work that they are doing right now, as well as supporting the basic utilities, mechanics, technology operations of the actual building that houses the Humanities Center. And also, the funding supports the strong financial accountability. They need to keep their books and provide reports to us and to the community, the communities that they represent and support, and also marketing and communications to make sure that the public has the best access to what they provide. And Mr. Chairman and members, with me, I have Mr. O'Fallon, who is the president of the Minnesota Humanities Center, who would like to tell you a little bit about the work that they're doing right now and a brief overview of what the actual funding will help them continue to do. And so I would like to welcome him to present to the committee.
Thank you, Senator.
Welcome, President O'Fallon. You want to identify yourself and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm David O'Fallon. I am the president of the Humanities Center. Thanks very much. And I'll start with an apology because somehow the map didn't get to you.
Oh.
However, it's perfect because you can work with me to imagine the state of Minnesota.
I have the map.
You can imagine the state of Minnesota, and you can imagine literally from the Thief River Falls, which, of course, is now well known as the championship community, down to Blue Earth and St. Peter and through Grand Rapids and Duluth and the metro area, and all of it is covered with programs that have been delivered by the Minnesota Humanities Center, and I mean delivered with some real impact. A point of the center that I'm proud of is that we don't license anybody. We have zero authority. I don't make anybody do anything. And over the last couple of years, over 10,000 people chose to work with us from 200 different communities. And I want to make the spirit of the center kind of real concrete for you. So, for example, the Humanities Center in the last couple of years created original literature. We always work with the community on needs that it feels rather than telling people what to do. So here's an example. Many of you have heard and we're all anxious about the kind of the disturbing recruitment of young Somali men, especially young Somali men, into ISIS and other forces. A few years ago, the Humanities Center worked with the Somali community, created original literature, which did not exist before, coming from the Somali traditions and cultures into bilingual books. Those books have now been distributed in the Somali communities across the state, thousands of copies, and a story I love to tell. just about less than a year ago, USAID called us up and begged us for permission to reprint 50,000 copies of that book for distribution to the Somali communities here and in Kenya. And that is cultural strength that keeps people honest and authentic in their work with each other rather than being kind of sidetracked into some kind of weird other destructive philosophy, if you will. So that's one example. Another example is we convened veterans at the center and said, what's missing? They said, what's missing is a capacity to talk about the veteran who's back and now has leadership capacity, a positive mission going forward. It's not just thanks for your service. It's not just fix somebody who's troubled. It's men and women who've served, who are back with skills, knowledge, capacity, and leadership. That has been launched at the Humanities Center. That's our Veterans Voices program. And as many of you know, and I'm really proud of this, the idea for making October Veterans Voices Month was launched at the Humanities Center, carried by many other people. And now we are the only state in the nation to have set aside an entire month. Part of the funds that we're asking your support for would, in fact, build educational materials and resources in that network of veterans as leaders that makes October Veterans Voices Month a fully realized month. One other example of that that's clearly statewide, as many of you know, we have a special kind of commitment to groups that have been often marginalized or left out of the conversation. So two quick examples of that. We've worked with the Dakota and the Ojibwe people to launch an exhibit called Why Treaties Matter. It's been around a few years now. Every single college and university campus in the MNSCU system has now decided they will host that exhibit. The funding that you're giving us will help provide the educational support and materials that will kind of make that even a really richer experience. Because to be honest, it's not enough to have a great exhibit if people walk through it, spend 30 seconds, and then move on. We have to be able to talk to each other and educate each other about what it means to live together right now, how we get along with each other in a kind of divisive time. So that's out there. So these, we're creating original literature. We're providing professional development that didn't exist before. We're reaching people who are often not maybe fully included in the public conversation. So my last concrete example, deep faith in the U.S. Constitution, unbelievably unique in the history of democracy in the human community. We worked with TPT and other communities across the state to engage people in conversations on the Constitution, stimulated by the PBS series that was created right here in St. Paul by the TPT. So we engage people across the entire political spectrum in the same room. So people who identified as Tea Party, people who identified as somewhere off the left-hand scale of Democrats, and everybody in between in the same room talking to each other about American democracy and the Constitution. Hundreds of people in a dozen different communities across the state. That's the work of the Humanities Center. The foundation funding that you give us really supports the bones and the blood, the electricity, the basic staff of that center. So that's my short story. I'm sorry I don't have the map to hold up.
No, I think that was fine, Mr. O'Fallon. Any questions for Mr. O'Fallon? Okay, well, I think you both did a good job of presenting Senate File 387. We're going to lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and thanks for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, members.
Thank you, Senator Torres-Ray, very much. Thank you.
Senate File 74. And Senator Carlson, you chaired the subdivision. Would you offer a motion to adopt the subdivision report?
In the absence, Mr. Chair, of Senator Gazelka, I will do so.
Well, I mean, this is the subdivision report now.
Yes.
All right. So Senator Carlson moves the subdivision report. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So we have adopted the subdivision report. And now, Senate File 74, Senator Gazelka, welcome. And go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Chair, we're moving just Senate File 74 here. Is that right? After the discussion?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Members, this is about a program that Camp Ripley has. In the beginning, the program was called Army Compatible Use Buffer, or ACUB. The ACUB program was intended to protect and is intended to protect the mission of Camp Ripley by creating a permanent buffer around Camp Ripley that is compatible with the camp's mission. This has been accomplished by taking advantage of available opportunities to minimize encroachment of incompatible land use, primarily residential development. The legislation before you today in Senate File 74 will simply formalize a process that Camp Ripley has been using for years through the ACUB program. Establishing sentinel landscapes in state law will allow us to move more effectively or to more effectively compete with federal funding from agencies beyond just the Department of Defense and to better align federal and state programs that could support private landowners in a sentinel landscape. This is a voluntary program. Since 2004, the Department of Defense has contributed $23 million into this program, and the Lessard Sams another $4 million. With that, I'm going to have Jay Brzezinka and Don Kerr testify, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
That'd be fine, Senator Gazalka. Who wants to be first?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jay Brzezinka, and I'm with the Environmental Program up at the Camp Ripley Military Training Center in central Minnesota.
Welcome, Mr. Brzezinka.
Thank you, sir. I just have a short presentation that I'll provide some background regarding the Senate File 74. In America, there are over 420 major military installations across the country. Most of these were built 100 years ago, typically in isolated areas, away from large populations. Of course, the rapid pace of development and the economic engines that these military bases are leads to incompatible development, which in turn affects the missions and the operations of these bases. In 2013, three federal agencies announced a new initiative known as the Sentinel Landscape Partnership. The intent is to help reduce the adverse effects of incompatible development. These agencies include the Department of Defense, Department of Agriculture, and Department of Interior. They are working together to protect military readiness, to preserve working land such as agriculture and forest management, and to promote conservation on the landscape. Their goal is to focus on where these priorities overlap. Camp Ripley currently has a program called the Army Compatible Use Buffer Program, also known as ACUB. Over the last 10 years, we've been working with two partners to execute the program. They are the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources and the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. This program is a willing landowners program. For those landowners that are interested, there are two land protection measures, either fee acquisition or a conservation easement. 95% of the involved landowners are interested in conservation easements. This program was established in 2004 and is currently being funded primarily by the Department of Defense, $23 million to date, along with Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council funds, $4 million to date. The Camp Ripley ACUB program has been one of the most successful buffer programs in the nation, having completed 107 lands transactions representing over 14,000 acres. The completed transactions are shown in red on the image. In addition, over 220 interested landowners representing 28,000 acres are interested in participating in the program pending funding availability. This level of interest is an indicator of how effective the ACUB program has been. The interested landowners are shown in pink on the map provided. Camp Ripley is an amazing 53,000-acre facility that has prepared our soldiers for the battlefield for decades. In addition, Camp Ripley is the largest state-owned game refuge in Minnesota. It is one of the most culturally and ecologically rich environments in the Midwest, bordered by 18 miles of the most pristine shoreline along the Mississippi River. This Sentinel Landscape Initiative can be defined as preserving the working and rural character of our private lands, which is important for both national defense and conservation. In Minnesota, working lands for agriculture and forestry and other natural lands provide many important public benefits, not to mention the importance of protecting the Mississippi River as a drinking water supply for St. Cloud, St. Paul, and Minneapolis. The recreation opportunities for hunting and fishing, habitats for species of greatest conservation need, shoreline protection of the Mississippi River, open space, commodity production, and maintaining the rural character of Minnesota is the focus of the legislation before you. This legislation will simply formalize a process that we've used for years to enhance the effect of the ACUB program, and it will complement a national direction of the Department of Defense. Established Sentinel Landscapes and State Lab will provide a model for the nation and will allow us to more effectively compete for federal funding from agencies just beyond the Department of Defense. It will also better align federal and state programs that could support private landowners in a Sentinel Landscapes. Joining me today are partners that have helped implement this great program. The members include representatives from Board of Water and Soil Resources, Department of Natural Resources, the Nature Conservancy, and the Minnesota National Guard. And I would like to open it up for questions or comments.
Questions for Mr. Brzezinski. Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Brzezinski, can you tell me, in this landscape here, we're looking at a lot of acres. How much of that land is currently in agricultural production, if any?
Mr. Brzezinski.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator, that buffer that's around that on that map represents 110,000 acres. Approximately about 40,000 acres are currently in agriculture, kind of the southern third of the installation on the outside of the post. The northern third, we're right in the transition of the ag and forested environment, so the northern third of the installation is vastly forested, so are the adjacent lands.
Follow up, Mr.
Yes,
Chair.
Yes, Senator Deems.
So if that land was purchased or becomes under the ACUB parcels, would that farming still continue on that land?
Mr. Brzezinski.
Chairman, Senators, yes, it will. The majority of the land is in easements, and they'll still stay with the current land use.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Brzezinski, you mentioned the Nature Conservancy. I don't see it. Any information or language in the bill mentioning that name. Can you direct me to where it might be in the bill?
Mr. Brzezinski.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, it's not in the bill. They're a partner, as is Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, Turkey Federation. We have a lot of adjacent partners that have been part of the supporting this program. When it comes to the execution of the program, both the Board of Water and Soil Resources and Department of Natural Resources are the two agencies that help execute the program.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Brzezinski, I see there's an amendment that's going to go on here that's going to not eliminate the coordinating committee. Is there a reason why we're not allowing this committee to go away after that's the way it was originally designed? It's supposed to expire the day after the report was submitted. Can somebody give me some reason why we're going to continue the coordinating committee?
Mr. Chairman, members, Senator. The intent is to maintain that committee. There'll be a lot of expertise in the different agencies that'll help us execute this program. This program will probably take 15 to 20 years. It's a willing landowner program, so we'd want to maintain that coordinating committee to help provide advice as we move forward with the program.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
So, Senator Guzelka, what was the purpose for putting that in there to say it was going to go away and then it's not going to go away?
Senator Guzelka.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson and Ms. James, I'm not sure if we first had it in because there's been an amendment once in this process, so I'm not 100% sure the process of in and out of that particular piece.
Ms. James, can you help us out?
Mr. Chair, in the original draft, and I don't have any explanation for why it was included in the original draft, but in the original draft, it expired the day after the report. Maybe someone noticed that that's how we typically write these groups. But then they pointed out that they needed this group to continue, and so we took out the expiration in the amendment.
Senator Anderson, does that answer the question?
Yes. Not really, but it does.
Other questions for Mr. Brzezinski?
Mr. Chair, I thought we'd have
Senator Guzelka.
Mr. Kerr testify as well.
That'd be great. Senator Kerr? Mr. Kerr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don Kerr, the Executive Director for the Department of Military Affairs. I don't have much to add, but I'll do a little bit, and I think I'll try to answer Senator Anderson's question as well. What we're really doing here is trying to codify a process that the three state agencies, along with the Board of Water and Soil Resources and Morrison County, have really kind of established on our own. This puts it into statute, and it also, by designating as a Sentinel Landscape, gives us a competitive advantage in this emerging federal program that will make us eligible to compete for funds, grants that are available from the Department of the Interior at the federal level and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. As part of this, we're including now the State Department of Agriculture, who had not been involved in the process previously. And Senator Anderson, this really is an ongoing event. We relook this landscape and look at the dollars that are available and changes to federal programs that may allow us better leverage to find different ways that we can protect the lands around Camp Ripley, not only to preserve them for their natural beauty and value, but also to protect our military training by preventing encroachment around Camp Ripley of non-compatible use. So maintaining the committee moving into the future, we think, is absolutely necessary, because the other thing that we're examining is our vision of what the compatible lands or the lands that are impacted by military operations on Camp Ripley might evolve over time as we become more sophisticated about how we measure the sound contours and where our military activities at Camp Ripley may have more impact. We may expand in a more sophisticated manner than simply drawing a circle around Camp Ripley. There may be areas along the air corridors that we will add to Sentinel landscape if the committee makes that recommendation down the road. So we really see this as more of an evolutionary committee that all three agencies, or all the state agencies, are willing to fund from within their existing appropriations. We think it's a great program that shows a lot of partnership, federal and state, and then among state agencies.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I see here local fiscal impact. Who's paying the $55 a day for reimbursement of expenses?
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, that was one of the things that should have come out in the last amendment, or the amendment that was adopted today by adopting the subcommittee report.
Senator Anderson, would you like us to have Mr. Lundeen go over that fiscal note?
It did come out. I don't see where it came out.
It's like 1.12.
1.12?
Division report.
Division report.
Yeah, yes. Give me some insight as to where that $55 came
from. Senator Gazelka and testifiers, I think we'll ask Mr. Lundeen to go over the fiscal note right now. Mr. Lundeen.
Okay. The fiscal note was drawn up to the bill as it originally came in, but in any event, the compensation costs were absorbed by the agencies that were available. If you look, Department of Agriculture, Military Affairs, Natural Resources, and the Water and Soil Resources Board. So even before we took out the compensation language, the costs were going to be absorbed. So there is no cost to this bill that we have to track in the committee.
Other questions on the fiscal note? Okay, Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Chair, these may be closing comments, but the benefit of moving this forward as fast as we can, the earlier adopters of this program hold a distinct competitive advantage among other places around the country that are vying for the same federal dollars. And I think they really look to Camp Ripley because we've been doing it for over 10 years, recognizing that it's been extremely successful. And part of the reason it has been is because they've been reaching out to all the community members and players involved. Virtually no complaints, but a lot of people that have been very enthusiastic about the efforts that Camp Ripley's done. Both in communicating to the communities around them, but also all the other groups that have linked up to them, because it's not just a win for Camp Ripley, it's a win for the whole area.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, it shows on the fiscal note there is no money from the federal fund, and yet you just said vying for federal dollars. That seems contradictory.
Yeah. Let Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson, so as far as the cost of operating the program, there is no federal contribution except for if you look more closely in the Department of Military Affairs, there actually are fiscal costs. Those are billbacks to the federal government from our agency. But the dollars that come in are actually expended then to pay the landowners for the conservation easements or the fee acquisition. So the amount of those dollars is unknown because we'll have to compete for them. But if they're provided, that's what we use to actually pay the landowners, the willing landowners, for either fee acquisition or the conservation easement, Senator.
Other questions for Senator Gazelka and testifiers? Okay, Senator Gazelka, I was hoping that you would move that your subdivision report be adopted and that Senate File 74 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee.
Would
you move that?
Yes, thank you.
Senator Gazelka moves that. Any discussion on that? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The Senate File 74, as amended, will be sent to the Finance Committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Last, we have the Advisor's Office Administrative Rules System and item presentation. And with us today is Kirk Kadalka, Assistant Commissioner for the PCA. Mr. Kadalka.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadalka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And I'm here today on behalf of the agencies and a recommendation that's in the governor's budget. In your packets, there is a little flyer that talks a little bit more about this. It is about creating an electronic official rulemaking record system. Right now, each agency has a docket of rulemakings that they keep up to date, but each agency does it a little different, and when rulemakings are completed, a lot of times all those documents go into boxes in the cold storage, and so the access to them, while available, does take more time and is not at everyone's fingertips. The goal of this proposal is to increase the usability of those documents for folks and the transparency in the rulemaking process. Much like there's a bill tracker on the reviser system, the goal would be to have a similar system for rulemaking. So it's a one-stop shop where folks can easily review the rulemakings, and especially when we start getting the historical records, have those at their fingertips, whether it's for a court case at a later date or someone doing legislative history or agency history, that information would be available. So the proposal before you is for the reviser's office to create a system that would be able to house these documents. It would be a general fund request that would start out with a pilot project, an attempt at the system, and then move in the second year in a larger one-time funds at the tune of just over $850,000 to help with designing the system, and then ongoing funds of at the range of $430,000 a year to operate the system. This would be under the control of the reviser's office. The reviser's office, much like the legislature, has a separate IT system, so it would be outside Minute, although Minute would be brought in during its creation because there would have to be interactions with agencies to use it. With that, Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for the time to just talk a little bit about the system, and if you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Questions for Mr. Kadalka? Everybody understands?
No.
Senator Stumpf.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you go back and talk a little bit about what Minute is doing and why they cannot do this?
Mr. Kadalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Minute, it works with all the agencies, and the legislature is outside of Minute and has its own IT functions. We thought that the agencies thought it would be best if this system would be housed on the reviser's website, because that's where folks go right now for records on legislative history, statutes. The copies of the current rules are all located there, along with the reviser is the office that does a lot of the documents. They create a lot of the documents already. So it made sense for them to be the ones to house it. And since they would have to build it with their IT folks, they have their own IT staff that does it, that's outside Minute. It's just because it's not within the umbrella of the state agencies is the short answer.
Senator Torres Rae.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you explain to us today how the system works in terms of how each agency has, you know, kind of their own rulemaking process under, and this will become part of kind of one database? Could you go over that a little bit more in depth?
Mr. Kudalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, right now each agency works with the Office of Administrative Hearings to go through the rulemaking docket, and it's required that each agency have on its website a rulemaking system. However, each agency has it look a little different, and how the documents are accessed are each unique. The system that's with the MPCA, the formatting, what's available and how it's done is different than what other agencies are, but they all meet the letter of the law. The goal here would be to have a standardization across all agencies in one location for folks to be able to get the information, just like the bill tracking system that the revisor system currently has. So in essence, if the current system is built much like if each bill was only on someone's agency's website, that's how it would be made available. It's each in individual spots. We're trying to centralize it just like the bill tracking system.
Senator Torres Rae.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But this is only for the PCA rules. So the other agencies continue to maintain. There is no indication that we're going to... Because part of, I think, the issue is... when we look into, you know, really understanding how the rule becomes operational and all that, we tend to go to the agency to try to figure it out. So what could you tell us a little bit more about, is it because the rules are more complex and there's more volume, or why this, and what is the value of it in this particular instance?
Mr. Kudalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, PCA, while I'm with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, we're just the one that's advocating for it on behalf of all agencies. So this would be a system for all agencies, all boards to be able to use to have everything in one location. The issue of why to do this instead of going on the agency's websites, while that... It could be done in that manner. It's one centralized spot would be very helpful. If someone's looking up and does practices, for instance, environmental law, they deal with a lot of agencies. They deal with the Department of Health when it comes to drinking water. They deal with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. They deal with the Department of Natural Resources. So being able to have all those rules and the rulemaking docket in one place would be very helpful. Just like all the rules right now, the current set of rules, just like the current set of statutes, is all located on the revisor's website. When someone wants to look up an MPCA or someone else's rule, they go to the revisors. If they want to then find out what may be happening and changing or being proposed in that, we want them to be able to look at the same place, so it's all in one spot.
Thank you.
Senator Stumpf, did you get enough clarification?
Mr. Chairman, yes. This last... questioning helped.
Thank you, Senator Torres Rae. Anything else for Mr. Kudalka? If not, thank you for the clarification, Mr. Kudalka, and we'll look forward to working with you in the future. All right, members, we're not going to be meeting this Wednesday, neither will the subdivision. We have now heard all the bills that were ready in either the subdivision or the full division. So we're in a pretty good place, and we'll be putting the budget bill together here in a timely fashion. Are there any questions by any members? Meeting adjourned.